Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. Episode 174. The Players has been on this weekend. Mm-hmm. It feels like golf is everywhere at the moment, and there's lots and lots to talk about.
Yep. Sorry, I always do that.
It's like trying to get bloody blood out of a stone.
I like to make you work for the first like minute. You have to put a graft in.
I'm not quite feeling it yet today. Monday morning, kind of not fully operational on full cylinders. So
why?
We'll see what happens. Not sure. Just life's busy, isn't it?
Busy.
Life is busy.
Well, annoyingly, we've come in the same jumper today. That's one reason why it's a bad start today. very rarely happens, considering we have a lot of the same Lyle Scott gear. And how good is Lyle Scott gear, by the way?
Very good.
We've both come in black jumpers, which is a bit frustrating. So if you're listening, don't worry about it. If you're watching, we apologise. But yeah, there's a lot going on this weekend, and we have got an absolute jam-packed podcast for you today. And the talking point, you'll see from the title, we'll come on to in a moment, but could Rory McIlroy potentially leave TaylorMade Golf? We've got a few little conspiracy theories and a bit more of a broader topic as well we'll come on to a bit later on. But yeah, the Players was this weekend. I said on Twitter, got some love and some hate for it, I think we should swap the USPGA, it's no longer a major, and replace it with the Players. With one caveat,
totally agree.
All the LIV players who are eligible could play in the Players. Yeah. So your Cam Smiths and DJs will be there.
I totally agree. I think out of all the tournaments, I don't know whether kind of the PGA Tour or social media are doing a better job of hyping these tournaments up, but it's been a couple of real big events I've really enjoyed this year, genuinely, is the Waste Management at Scottsdale and the Players. Just thought, and Bay Hill as well. Bay Hill was like, Arnold Palmer Invitational was really high on the agenda as well. But the Players, I mean, it is just a phenomenal tournament. It really is.
Well, it's got that cliche being the fifth major, but it quite literally is, isn't it? It's the biggest event, I think, in most people's eyes, bar obviously the majors. The golf course looks pristine. And this narrative we've got now, which we're lucky to have, of obviously Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm and Rory, like these three guys who all kind of weirdly deserve to be world number one. Yep. That makes sense. In any other era, apart from Tiger, one of them would be world number one kind of all the time. But it's so competitive. And there's just such a strong, deep field at the moment. But yeah, it was, I think as well, I said to you before, off podcast, but for us in the UK, the time difference was perfect as well. It's about
really
5 hours behind. So it finishes at like 10:30 in the evening for us, which is not too late, obviously. But it's on in the evening, so you can kind of chill and watch it. For me, that is the perfect time to watch golf.
Yeah, in the UK, a lot of the whenever they're playing in Florida, it's definitely the best time zone for us. Phoenix, Arizona, the Waste Management, that was only just about good enough time because they teed off mega, mega early because of the Super Bowl. Where often when it goes kind of west side, it is much harder to watch because it goes on till like silly o'clock in the morning over here. But I mean, just the place itself, we'll come on to the Break 75 shortly, but the place, the venue, the high caliber of golfer, the fact that you've got that drama around the finishing few holes. I mean, it is just amazing. Big names like Rory McIlroy missed the cut, which is a real, real shock, certainly because he's won round Sawgrass as well. John Rahm pulled out because of injury, illness.
I think it's illness,
which was a kind of a weird mix up as well. There was loads and loads of stories. Players such as Hoagie, who finished. He had a 78 first day, kind of matched the same score I had at TPC Sawgrass. Exactly the same score. He nearly missed the cut after 2 days. He ends up finishing third or something silly. Had an unbelievable weekend. He shot the course record.
Tyrrell Hatton
on Saturday.
That's insane.
Tyrrell Hatton shoots like silly numbers on the back nine. Was it
seven under through the back nine?
I mean, that's just a joke.
I was watching that live. I watched a lot of his round. Certainly towards the end, when they're obviously showing more and more of it. He just, So good.
Yeah.
So, so good.
Isn't he an interesting character, Tyrrell?
He said it's one of the first times he's been seen smiling on the golf course. That shot on 18, I don't know if you saw
it. Yeah,
I
did. It was amazing.
Absolutely ridiculous. But he's kind of a weird one, Tyrrell Hatton, because he's obviously an English guy, but I kind of feel like he's somewhat... I don't think of him that much as being an elite, like, top, but he obviously is. Do you know? I don't quite know what... Maybe if you can get over there and win a major, you'll kind of put him in that kind of bracket.
Of
course. But he's always in and
always,
around, isn't he?
Always.
So good.
I mean, you looked at the leaderboard last night and there was a point in time where I think there was either four, I think it was four English golfers in the top 10.
Yeah, Tommy was up there.
You had Tommy, Justin Rose, Tyrrell Hatton.
Using the same putter or similar putters, those two.
And who would have been the fourth? I'll have to get the leaderboard up. It was definitely four players who were in the top 10 at one point. This is going to annoy me. Have I forgot? So Tyrrell, obviously.
Yeah.
Justin Rose.
Tommy,
and then who else? Maybe there was only three.
I can't think of another English.
Aaron Rye.
He was kind of doing decent with his two gloves. What's the story behind the two gloves, by the way?
I think it's all from what I understand. I've met Aaron a few times. He's coached by pals of mine, me and my golf, Andy and Piers. I believe when he was growing up, he always wanted to play these two gloves. They're kind of like, they are literally wet gloves.
Yeah.
And he's just stuck with them.
I like it.
Yeah. He's such an interesting character.
Iron
head covers. You know, he's used his two gloves. He's one of the hardest workers in the world of golf. Like, he really grinds and practices. Incredible holeing one on Saturday.
Yeah.
At the Players. There was three holeing ones this tournament. Just never been done before.
Really?
I don't even think there's ever been two in the same tournament.
Oh, wow.
So to have three in the same tournament, it was phenomenal. And then, unfortunately, on the Sunday, the reality of golf bit him back in the bum cheek in the fact that I think he made a double or even a triple on the 17th on the Sunday, which would have cost him a number of pennies.
Do you not think it just shows that, like, there are some golfers who have some little quirks, i.e. Aaron Rye wearing two gloves, and you get the odd funky swing, a Jim Furyk being one that springs to mind. But actually, as golfers, certainly at the elite level, they are so similar in so many ways. Like, why do we just wear one glove? Think about it. Like, why? Obviously, I understand why it's the hand that, you know, is on the golf club more than the other hand. But, like, it's so rare that one guy wears two gloves. Everyone takes a glove off when they put in.
Puts it in the back pocket.
It's just, it must just be a bit of a fashion thing. Because back in the day, obviously, the Jack Nicklaus days, they would put with the glove on. And then obviously, I don't know who it was. Like, there is a guy, though, I think he's kind of famed for being the first one who took it off, put it in his back pocket. And now it's a done thing. You know what I don't get as well, which all the top guys do? How they can play golf with the massive, huge yardage books in the back pocket.
It is huge,
isn't it? It's massive.
Yeah,
it's like an iPad in your back pocket.
You're right. They all have those massive books in the back pocket, don't they?
And I just don't know how they do that.
And you know what? I've got loads of those yardage books. I would not want them in my back pocket playing golf.
No.
I really wouldn't.
Or a small, like, normal size one. Yeah. But they've got massive, like, holders. Obviously, a scorecard in there.
Thing is, it looks cool, doesn't it?
It does look quite cool.
I think it looks really cool.
What I always like as well is when they put out on the 18th, they watch the bag and they get the Boss watch, the Rolex or the tag, and they put that on because, like, obviously the sponsor makes them. It's like, yeah, it's quite cool.
You know what I think they're really good at as well is, I don't know about you, when I've ever played golf and I'll get home that night, I've always typically got tee pegs in my pocket, ball markers, pitchforks when I'm taking my trousers off later.
That's where we differ.
Oh, do you clear it all out?
So as soon as I finish, I'm all out. I'm really precise. So golf ball is back in the bag. Save for another round. It might last another hole or so. Tee straight back in, pitchfork back in.
Oh,
I have to be
God.
Clean, yeah. Do you leave yours in?
Yeah, honestly, the amount of tee pegs and ball markers and pitchforks and old golf balls I've got near, even golf balls, I'll have a golf ball in my pocket still till way after the round of golf.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It's weird.
Not a fan of that. When we play golf, I'm sure you just pull out one tee out your bag at the start, don't you? Or do you get a handful?
I'll get about two or three.
Okay.
But that's it.
I'm a five or six guy. I like quite a few tees in there.
You know what I have got, though? I've been clearing out my garage recently, and I've got these, like, little soft, almost like goodie bags, like little pouches. And I've put in pitchforks and ball markers. The amount of pitchforks and ball markers I've got is scary. Like, yeah, when I come and play golf, I can have a buddy find one.
Yeah.
How many times have
you
used it in a
video? Wrench, which is annoying.
I've got hundreds of
filming
wrenches.
A club review on the golf course. You're like, I just want to take the loft down. I want to just change something or whatever. And it's like, got a wrench? No. She doesn't carry a wrench.
I've literally got wrenches. The problem is I've almost got too many of them.
You know what you need? There was a few seniors at my golf club back in the day. They may still do it. When they're playing golf, they'd have a towel attached to the trousers, right? And then they'd have like one of those like winter tees with like three different levels of pyramid tee on.
Or string together.
Yes, correct. You need a little wrench attached to your belt.
Again, it probably goes back to a point I made a couple of weeks ago. I feel like sometimes when there's too much choice, I don't make a choice.
Yeah.
And that's probably similar to wrenches and ball markers and pitchforks. When there's too many, I don't make a choice.
Yeah.
However, probably the biggest story has to go to Scottie Scheffler.
It does.
I mean, what the hell?
I saw a stat online. I think it was something along the lines of, and this isn't going to be perfect, but it was something like he's won six events in like 391 days, whatever it is. And there's only, I think, two other guys who've done that either. I think it was obviously Tiger and Jack Nicklaus. And I can't remember if the stat was just win six events in 400 days or the first 400 days from winning the first event. If that right. Either way, it was some crazy, crazy stat. And that you said before, I think again off podcast, kind of thought it might be a bit of a one season wonder.
When he went on that run last year, I thought, we'll never, he'll do this. He'll win the Masters and we'll never hear of him again.
Yeah.
Was I wrong?
You were wrong.
I mean, to be fair, after the Masters last year, he didn't set the world on fire.
No, he had, well, he didn't win again until...
No, but then obviously he goes and wins the Waste Management, goes and wins the TPC Sawgrass. Two huge events, and probably, again, going back to this kind of publicity, two of the biggest golf events that have happened so far this year. You know what's really interesting, though? I don't know if you've experienced this yet. I went to a party on Saturday night.
I know it was a party, just don't get invited.
There was a few non-golfers there, and we're chatting about golf and blah, blah, blah. And they said, you know, who's like the best in the world now? And they reeled off a few. And I said, well, have a guess. So I let them have a guess, and the typical names came out. What I'd class as household names, obviously, some of them guessed Tiger, someone guessed like Rory McIlroy and a few others. And I was like, Scottie Scheffler. And they went, who? I went, Scottie Scheffler, the guy who's, never heard of him. I'm like, this is madness, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I think, like you said, it takes a while for somebody to burst onto the scene and then almost transcend into household name.
Yeah.
I think if he was English, that'd be a different story. I bet so many more golfers, non-golfers would know Danny Willett is because he won the Masters and it's on the TV, it's on the news, it's on the front of the newspaper, whatever. So it will probably take a while. I wonder if that's different in the States, though.
Yeah, I must admit that the friends I was chatting to on Saturday night, they were all kind of English. So there were a lot of them that were talking European names.
Yeah,
Tiger being the exception.
I would imagine that in America, it might be a bit different because obviously when you win the Masters, it's a massive, massive deal. And naturally, whatever country you're from is going to be very proud of it, as Japan were when Matsuyama won, etc. And I imagine Spain were when obviously Sergio won. I bet he's bigger. But you're right, it takes a long time to come out of that kind of... within the sport to then become a household name outside of the sport. But I mean, I saw something online, I was reading a comment, somebody said he's going to end up in a Hall of Famer. And somebody almost said, well, he is already, which isn't probably quite true. But you look at his career, you know, he's won the Masters and five other PGA Tour events. I mean, what does determine in your eyes a great? Because you look at like a Montgomery or Lee Westwood, obviously famously have never won majors, but have won almost everything else he can win and been so strong for so long. Is it that determines an amazing career? I mean, if Scottie Scheffler retired tomorrow, God forbid he had an injury or just said, I'm sick of golf, does he go down as a great winning the Masters? Like, what does he have to do to become a great?
I suppose they will, obviously the Hall of Fame will have kind of rules to get to induct people into the Hall of Fame. But for me, I wonder if it is that kind of longevity. Like, but then again, you look at stacking those three careers up on top of each other, Westwood, Montgomery, and now Scottie Scheffler. And you would, it'd be a good argument to say Scottie Scheffler has achieved more in his golf certainly in the time frame.
In the time frame, no question.
But you can't look past, obviously, what Westwood did in the world of golf, what Colin Montgomery did in the world of golf. Like, even though they didn't win majors, they won bloody almost everything else.
Well, that's the point. And obviously, in golf, we have the four majors. And we, you know, they are the absolute pinnacle of the sport. And I imagine they always will be. And within that, you could almost argue, you know, I may argue that the Open and the Masters are kind of the two more elevated ones. I don't know. That's just a feeling that I have towards them. A lot of Americans, rightly so, love the US Open. I think most people, when you see in polls, do rank the PGA the lowest. And I'm not too sure why on that, but it doesn't get us quite as excited, does it? But to win the Masters is a massive achievement. He's done it already in his career.
Yeah.
So you think, like, if he goes on to have an okay career and wins once every couple of seasons for the next 20 years. I mean, that would be, that's another 10 events, like with a Masters in the bag as well. I mean, who knows what he's going to go on to do?
He's just, he, you know, when that run like yesterday, I mean, he was, we're going to come on to a few other stories in a moment, but like he got to, as he was approaching the back nine, he wasn't really setting the world on fire. He was kind of plodding along. I think he parred every single hole up until that point, maybe even bogeyed one early on, and then just went on a run of making five birdies on the bounce. Like, what the hell? Like, think about doing that. Well, you can't. Like, Sunday of the Players at Sawgrass, to be able to birdie five holes back-to-back.
Yeah.
To extend your lead significantly over your competition.
You know what's mad? This is a stupid shout. I almost can't see him not winning the Masters.
Yeah. That's...
Like, why is he not going to win the Masters?
Exactly. He doesn't seem right now to have a flaw at all. He doesn't ever seem phased about pressure. He's obviously shown that loads of times. I mean, look at even the shot. He stood there with the world watching, stood on the 17th tee with a lead, granted, but often that's harder to defend. Mm-hmm. Like when you've got such a significant lead, you almost get a bit sloppy, don't you?
Yeah.
He stands up there and just hits a wonderfully professional, beautiful shot into 17.
It feels like he could potentially, it's early to call this, and I know it's a bit of a cliche making Tiger comparisons, but he has that feeling about him, that kind of cool and calm and collected feeling where he could go on to be one of those guys that if he's leading a tournament, that's just it. Like when Tiger was leading a tournament, it's just it, isn't it? It's over, like he's won.
But what's bizarre about Scottie Scheffler, he doesn't seem to have a superpower. Like going back again to those days where Tiger used to win, we had a number of superpowers, but like his massive distance off the tee.
Irons, he's put in his...
He had this formidable performance on like birdieing the 72nd hole to win a tournament. Like Tiger had those kind of superpowers. Normally it was so dominant when he was playing against other players that they almost like fell away because of that.
The only way I could say that he does is like when he chips in.
Yeah.
He's in these rubbish places. You think, you know, he's going to have to get up and down. He holds it. I mean, he does that. Seems like he does that a lot. I think he chipped in three times in the few days, which is insane. But yeah, I don't know. He just seems to have everything. Maybe he's just so rounded. But, you know, it feels like it's a great time for golf. It is a shame, I'll be honest, although I'm not super passionate about Liv, that obviously Cameron Smith's not there. Would have been great to see him there as defending champion. It would have been good to see DJ there. A couple of others from Liv, but they're the two.
Definitely, again, this tournament, because it does feel a bit elevated than just a normal PGA Tour event. You're right. I would have loved to have seen a few of the more household names be playing.
But does that, though, even more so excite us for the majors? Because the four majors a year now are going to be the only time, maybe by the Ryder Cup, where we see these guys who will live and, you know, at PGA Tour, DP World Tour, competing together in the same field. That's going to be massive. And imagine if a Cameron Smith wins the Open again or wins the Masters. Imagine what Liv will, how they will shout about that, because they will. 100% Liv will talk about that. The best player who won, you know, the green jacket or whatever is on their tour. It's exciting.
They'll probably get all the wrong side of the draws.
Yes.
They'll be going out.
Going out 9 at night in the dark, playing night golf.
We've got to also touch on our friend.
Yes.
Podcast fan, the fan.
He's a huge fan.
Don't think he is a fan. Podcast guest, friend of the show, Minwoo Lee.
Yeah, oh my days, what a player. What a player.
We called it, didn't we?
We did.
Said it earlier. I mean, the round he had on Saturday, 66, to put himself into contention. I mean, I felt like I just wanted to reach out to him last night and like hug him and go, it's all right. Like, because obviously it was difficult to watch him that front nine.
Yeah.
The seven he had on the fourth. I mean, it was just like, oh, it's gut-wrenching. Because, you know, he has got such an incredible talent. He is going to win PGA Tour events, without a question. He is going to win majors, in my opinion. And you look at him, you go, oh, but hopefully he learns from that kind of day.
100%, but I do feel like, although he kind of, some degree, kind of fell away, obviously, I do feel like Scottie Scheffler won it as well, though.
He did.
Didn't feel like Minwoo lost it, necessarily. But yeah, I was going to do a tweet last night, I couldn't be bothered in the end, but... We've been very fortunate, obviously, in the last few years to film with some amazing golfers, haven't we? Adam Scott, Lee Westwood, you know, the list goes on. Most people watching, listening, can know who we're talking about. And before that, in my old job, I got to play with some great golfers, meet some great golfers, watch them on the range, etc. Honestly, I would say that day we did the Break 75 at King's Barnes, and you played, obviously, Minwoo Lee, was arguably the most impressed I've ever been with a golfer in real life. Now, admittedly, he played out of his skin, so naturally you're going to be impressed. But he's just got it all.
Yeah.
So there's long off the tee.
Yeah. He seems to cruise in fourth gear off the tee, and then when he wants to rip one, he's got like a turbo six gear.
Yeah.
Like he just absolutely turns it on. I love seeing him birdie 17 last night. I think he hit one of the best shots into 17 yesterday. Makes birdie.
I love how he got the crowd G'd up.
Big smile on his face. Like, you know, that hopefully he takes those positives. He still came tied six. Like, it wasn't a complete disaster.
Gained a lot of new fans, I think, as well.
A lot of new fans. I think he gets into the next tournament, Valspar, this week coming up. He has got an incredible future in the game.
Do you think it's a shame? Not a shame, because it's kind of the natural progression, but somewhat a shame that for DP World Tour players, it is the natural pathway that you kind of leave the DP World, not leave, but you move on to PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Because that's what everyone wants to do, don't they? Let's be honest. Well,
that's where the money is.
Yeah.
It's where the money is. It's where the best players are. It's where you get to play the best golf courses. The best, more
all
eyeballs.
In one country, really.
More sponsorships.
Yeah.
Really, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And even when you look at the actual scheduling of PGA Tour, you're right. You're not as many times on a plane. Yeah, you obviously have to jump around, but like, they do the Florida swing, they do the California swing, they do, you know, all these different. So you're in an area, you're in a county, not a county. What are they called over there?
A state.
State for a period of time, you know, and while you're playing these different tournaments. But yeah, it's exciting times. You were telling me just before about why it's his two iron so long.
I saw a thing online again. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounded true. When he plays his sister, Minji Lee, who's a two-time major champion, the only rule that she has is that they'll play off the same tees, but he can't hit his driver off the tee. And I guess it must be his three wood as well. So he hits two iron when he's playing against her. And I'm sure his balls are just like 160 odd plus anyway, which is like our driver. But he absolutely destroys that two iron. He's so long. And I'm going to do another cliche again about Tiger. And I don't know what it is. So I can't put my finger on it. So it's not the best point I'm going to make. But there's something about him that gives me a bit of a Tiger vibe. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's his kind of his physique almost at the early, 1997 Tiger, and just kind of slender and slim, but kind of toned. Maybe it's that. I don't know. But there's something about him that gives me that little bit of a vibe.
He's got that ability to impress on every situation. Like any shot he plays, where again, probably going back to this kind of superpower of Scottie Scheffler, I never feel like he really impresses me with a shot. I never go, oh my God, that shot's, nobody else in the world could do that shot. Tiger could do that. Yeah. And I feel like Min Woo Lee could do that. Do you know, you look at Tiger's greatest 10 shots and they're all where he's in a bunker
and it's like
a horrible
below
lie
his feet
and, he's got to hit it over a tree with a 3-iron and, you know, all those like unbelievable golf shots. Tiger had that ability. And I feel like, again, Min Woo Lee has, where, again, I've not seen it. Scottie Scheffler just doesn't seem to have that superpower.
I think
but also he doesn't need it.
Well, that's it. Sometimes those amazing shots come after a bad tee shot.
Always.
So Tiger, as great as he is at golf, and always was, obviously, he was very capable of spraying it. And then that's where you get in these mad positions. But speaking of golfers who are impressive to watch, there's arguably nobody more impressive than Rory. To watch him drive the golf ball, he is arguably the best driver in our lifetime, would you say?
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody that is longer, straighter, been more consistent with it. Potentially.
Yeah, you could probably throw in maybe DJ into that mix, but Rory is
he's up there.
He's in
the conversation, isn't he? Well, there was some, and the title of this podcast, as you've seen, you might just skip to this point, so hello if you've just joined us, but could Rory potentially be splitting up with TaylorMade? Now, this is a bit of speculation, but there's some evidence maybe behind this or some discussion behind this. I want to hear your thoughts on this. There was quite a popular clip this weekend because Rory missed the cut this weekend. He shot 5 over par and for the two rounds. And there was a clip of him doing the rounds. We might insert in here briefly if we can. And he says this basically. Yeah, I wish I didn't have to bed in a new driver. I wish I could just use the old one, right? So lots of people saw that clip and put two and two together. And he won the Dubai Desert Classic in January, and he was using the Stealth driver, not the Stealth 2. And we talked about that in our podcast at the time. And, you know, you could argue, well, so what? TaylorMade don't care as long as he's using a TaylorMade driver, and that might be the case. But we also know, as been proven by today, when an athlete wins with a Stealth 2 driver, TaylorMade shout about it, as they have done with Scottie Scheffler, and rightly so. They're paying these guys a lot of money, so they want to shout about it as much as they can and talk about forgiveness and blah, blah, blah. But basically, Rory has had to switch out of his Stealth, the original, let's call it Stealth 1 for now, into the Stealth 2. And that's why he said this quote, I wish I could just use the old one. So lots of people were thinking, oh, right, so TaylorMade have told him, enough of that old one, you have to be in the new one. Now, his apparent reasoning, the reason he is saying it is because everybody knows, even if you're not super nerdy, that golf clubs have a limit with the driver face, and they get tested out on tour. So every now and again, they will get tested at random, and the R&A or the USGA might pick Rick Shields' driver if he's in an event and test the face. And if it's too hot, that driver is deemed illegal. You'd have to put another driver in play, or you could get penalised if it's post around or whatever. It depends on the situation. But Rory is saying that his Stealth 1 face is potentially borderline hitting that kind of illegal territory, because obviously, as he's hit it so many times at such speed, that face actually does become faster, which there is some truth in. We've seen that. People online have done that test before over a long time. So that was, he's saying that he's had to take the Stealth out and then put the new one in because the old one is getting maybe too hot. I don't want to take that risk, because if it did turn out to be illegal, it would look very bad for him and very bad for TaylorMade. So, I mean, is that the truth? Or is it the case that TaylorMade have said, look, you've had a bit of fun using the old one, you've won with it, great, but you have to be in the new one? TaylorMade pay him roughly, we believe, around $10 million a year to use TaylorMade clubs.
A day.
A day, an hour. And in 2022, last year, he re-signed for a multi-year deal. But I think one of the things that changed in that deal was it wasn't a 14-club deal anymore, because he's currently using Vokey wedges. So he's moved away from TaylorMade wedges and he's moved into Vokey wedges. So ultimately, you know, let's be honest, he's saying there, for me, for Rory, I don't believe TaylorMade wedges are the best. I want to use the best for me, therefore I'm going to use Vokey. And that's part of his deal. He's allowed to do that. He doesn't seem very happy about the fact that obviously he's now using the Stealth 2 and not the old Stealth 1. Is this going to cause a bit of friction? Because TaylorMade have also done a tweet, again, rightly so, shouting from the rooftops about Scottie Scheffler using their driver. So they put a tweet out saying, never a doubt, Scottie Scheffler captures the player's title, trusting his Stealth 2 driver to tame Sawgrass in convincing fashion and move to world number one ranking. He led the field in driver distance and was second in strokes gained off the tee. Hashtag forgiveness. And a lovely graphic. Pretty much all the comments below are people talking about Rory. Good thing he spent money on Rory. Get Rory a Titleist driver. Cancelled my Stealth 2 order. Is there a discount for the old one? Rory convinced me to never buy from TaylorMade. Someone's put, Rory McIlroy, where you at, bro? Then someone else put, let's have a conversation, Rory, about drivers. The list goes on. Now, I know Twitter is full of potential trolls and people having a bit of a laugh, but this isn't good for TaylorMade, is it? Where does Rory and TaylorMade go from this?
It's a very interesting time for equipment manufacturers and players right now. I'm not sure if I've ever known a year where there's been so many controversies and players using old drivers, new drivers. Was it Colin Morikawa, who again is a TaylorMade athlete, is currently using the Sim 1 driver?
Correct.
Which is what, 4 years old now?
Well, so 2023 is the Stealth 2, 2020, I believe it launched.
So, you know, that is really rare.
Yeah.
Now with TaylorMade, they've pretty much always had this kind of policy when they bring a brand new driver out, and you always see it at the the event they play in Hawaii, Champions of Champions, whatever it may be, that pretty much every single TaylorMade player, athlete, paid, you know, sponsored player will put the brand new driver in the bag. But over time, some of those drivers have been moving out and old ones have been going in. Rory McIlroy, I mean, that surprises me that he said that out in public.
Yep.
It really does. You'd think he'd kind of just keep that under his hat and not really say anything. He's obviously he is outspoken. We've seen that with his relationship between PJ and Liv. I don't think it'll massively hamper the future of Rory and TaylorMade. However, I'm saying that now. Who was the other player that mentioned who did something similar to this about a year or so ago?
Bryson
DeChambeau. At a time where he was using Cobra golf clubs, he slagged off the driver.
Yeah.
And said he couldn't get it working. Lo and behold, Less than 12 months later, he has now ended his contract with Cobra.
Yeah.
Has he ended it? Have they ended it? Who knows? But it certainly, there's no smoke without fire.
Well, also,
and I think this comment from Rory might just be a little bit of smoke.
Well, also on this as well, this is from golf.com. It's a really good article. This is from Thursday's round. So obviously he missed the cut on Friday, but on Thursday, it said the upside though for Rory was he still gained 0.7 strokes on the field with his driver. So his driver was actually kind of working on Thursday, putting him inside the top 20 in that category. He actually struggled more with his short game and putter, where his strokes gained were minus 2.6 with his flat stick, right? So his putter was off. So again, I'm not kind of trying to, you know, make things up here. If he's not putting well and he's not enjoying his putter and he's not always been known as being the best putter, Rory, he can be off with it. But then I started thinking as well, you look at TaylorMade, some of the best athletes. You've got Scotty Scheffler, TaylorMade athlete, uses Scotty Cameron. You've got Tommy Fleetwood, uses an Access putter, or Access, whatever it's called. And obviously, you've famously got Tiger, who uses his Scotty Cameron. We can always put that to one side. He's never going to leave that putter, I don't think, although he has dabbled. But you think, well, if Rory is using a putter that he's not massively playing well with, or he might want to swap, he might not do. He has to stay with TaylorMade, because that's part of his deal. His wedges, yeah, he's moved out of. His irons, he's got to use TaylorMade. It's obvious that he's got to use his TaylorMade, you know, driver. And he has to, apparently, looks like he has to use the latest one. Now, he's getting paid $10 million there or thereabouts, we believe, a year. TaylorMade are in their right, sure, to say, use latest gear. You know, Rory is playing this game, as he says, why didn't join Liv for legacy and to win tournaments, not necessarily for the cash. Why don't they just say, you know what, I don't want 10 million, keep me 10 million quid a year, I'll play what I want to play, and I'll hopefully win more tournaments.
I think, yeah. I would totally understand that. Again, from a point of view, he could be completely brand neutral now, which a lot of players have gone to, and he could use any golf clubs he feels fit. I think the only thing now that would make me believe they want to also be with a manufacturer is what Tommy Fleetwood said in the podcast with us about how important the manufacturer was, almost being there.
Like an F1 mechanic.
Correct. They are almost so on their numbers. Like Chris Trott from TaylorMade will be so on the player's numbers all the time that the player doesn't even have to really worry about it too much. You know, almost they're being looked after in this kind of, like you say, F1 style where they go to the mechanic and go, please help me with everything I need. And the mechanic already knows everything that needs to tweak. Where you do lose a bit of that if you go completely brand agnostic.
Yeah.
But I'm also pretty convinced Rory McIlroy could go out and employ the best club fitter in the world to work with him.
You beat me to it, exactly.
To work with him 100% of the time.
Exactly. Rory could say, you know what, I'm going to employ X person.
He could say, come, Chris Trott, come
yeah,
work
you can
with
work
me.
With me. I want to have a mixed bag. Clearly, if he went with Callaway for some irons or whatever, they're going to let him on the tour truck and fix his clubs up for him. Of course they are. So you're going to get that same service. You're going to have a custom fitter that's personal to him, like a coach, like a short game coach or a long game coach. I mean, obviously these guys, they want the cash. Why would you not want $10 million a year to play with golf clubs? But when these things are your tools, surely you just want to use the best that is for you. And we know that all the brands make good gear. But sometimes, like Rory with that first stealth, you find the driver that you love. And it might be the case, it might be honest that it's the case that it's getting too hot and he thinks it might become illegal. I'm not sure if it is the case, because surely you could just find another stealth one that was similar to his old one and you can put that into the bag. We've also seen as well this week that Victor Hovland, who's a ping player, has a ping head cover, a G430 head cover on his 3-wood. It's actually a stealth 2, I believe. So he's kind of using not what it looks like.
He's using Rory's hand-me-downs.
Yeah, exactly. They've swapped. And then
flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Also, we've seen that he said Bryson now, he did a What's in the Bag on YouTube. He's using pretty much all Ping stuff now, which I don't know if that would be a paid thing or not, if he's just found that for him, Ping are the best. But
By the way, I didn't watch the full video. I kind of watched a bit of it. I've not watched it fully yet. Is he also using single length clubs still?
So he's got single length Ping irons, yeah. He's got the LA Golf putter. His driver, he's got a Stealth and a Ping, which he's going to have as a backup and switch between. But it was very Ping heavy. But it just makes you think as well, doesn't it? Like, again, it's so obvious, but these guys playing with certain brands because they're getting paid.
The other thing as well, if you looked at it from Rory's point of view, let's say, you know, reportedly getting $10 million a year to be with TaylorMade. On top of that as well, TaylorMade will have requirement days for him mm-hmm. where he's got to do commercials, he's got to do media, he's got to do, you know, all these things. Rory might go, well, actually, I can't be bothered doing these days. And like mm-hmm. I say, for 10 million, it sounds ridiculous. To you and me and to everyone listening, we're thinking, what the hell, you'd never turn down 10 million. But for him, he's like, well, I've already got however many millions in the bank. I could go and sign with somebody, regardless of, like, he could make 10 million somewhere else, mm-hmm. and it doesn't mean he has to sign with a club manufacturer.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean
yeah,
by that?
Correct.
Like, he could go and sign a new company. He could sign a new endorsement for a new car company, yeah. couldn't he, tomorrow?
Land Rover, whatever it might
and
be.
And get $10 million from that. Mm-hmm. So, and then he can still use the equipment that he wants.
Well, that's it. And I also, this is probably a step too far, but hear me out on this. We also think, and we said it a lot, that like Scottie Scheffler winning with Stealth 2 is great PR for TaylorMade. They can shout about it. And to some degree, that may or may not excite consumers who might this weekend coming up go, you know what, I'm going to go try Stealth 2 now. If it's good enough for Scottie Scheffler, it's good enough for me. But we also know that's not really how the world works. As I said, when I worked for Nike, which I've said many times, I know, but people didn't buy Nike clubs because Tiger and Rory used them. It might give them encouragement to try them, but if they didn't perform, they didn't like them, they wouldn't buy them. Could there ever be a time, this is probably never going to happen, let's be serious, but could there be a time where brands stop paying tour pros and they say, you know what, rather than spending $10 million on Rory, $15 million on Tiger, $5 million on Scottie Scheffler, the list goes on, we're going to save that money and we're actually going to go to the marketplace and spend that money in other ways. So, for example, that $10 million that we'll save on Rory, we'll utilise
To sign Rick Shields.
We'll utilise to travel the States, employ a load of people and set up demo days at loads of golf clubs and get these clubs in people's hands. Think how much they could do with $10 million. And what would be more powerful to the average person? Watching Rory win with TaylorMade or having an unbelievable experience with TaylorMade staff trying the product. Maybe, again, playing a bit silly here, but maybe if they're not spending all this money on athletes, they could slightly reduce the price points potentially with the money they're saving. That could make them borderline a bit more affordable, might sell more units. I don't know.
Do you know what? I think there's an even important point to this. Genuinely, what everything you've just mentioned there, I agree with. There's one more, absolutely more important thing. When TaylorMade are trying to make their new drivers, who are they trying to make it for?
Exactly.
For the best players in the world. Mm. Well, how many of those are there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you and me, everyone listening, We can't use those pieces of equipment. I genuinely believe I found that with Stealth and Stealth 2. Mm-hmm. I can't use the Stealth 2.
Yeah.
It, for me, I'm not fast enough. I don't hit it in the middle enough, personally, for me. So, you know, if you're an 18 handicapper, you probably, again, I'd like to think you're not going to enjoy Stealth 2. I'm not saying you should give it a try and whatever, but for me, if TaylorMade then parted ways with every single man, you know, athlete, would they even change the model of golf clubs they would be making?
Well, that, you know, potentially, yeah. I mean, obviously in the irons, they kind of, most brands do that. They have an iron that a tour pro might use, which is typically a blade or a small cavity, and they might have big chunky things, the average guy. You know, in drivers, they do that to some degree, like Stealth HD is more forgiving. But you are right. I think Stealth's been a standout driver that is, for the average person, hard to hit. So if they are building those for the tour guys, they're not the most forgiving out there. But it's interesting, isn't it? And I don't know. I think
too many brands make product for tour players.
Yeah.
And they don't make it for the average golfer.
Good point.
Because for me, again, going back to this point, like, let's say next year, TaylorMade bring out the TaylorMade
Stealth 3. Powered.
No, the TaylorMade Smasher. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
That's realistic. So what's going to happen?
Is it?
I believe they should be making the TaylorMade Smasher for next year for a 12 handicapper. Mm. You know, that their absolute flagship model should be for more majority of golfers that play the game.
Would they not argue that that's what the loft sleeve and the weight can help you do as well, though?
But put all your R&D into that product. Mm. Then make a TaylorMade, what did I say, Smasher?
Smasher TP.
For your tour player.
Yeah, fair dues.
Because that's so specific. Make it smaller, make it faster, make it more forgiving, less forgiving, blah, blah, blah. But that's for only 10 people in the world who are going to be able to hit that driver.
Well, that's good little conversation. I'd love to hear people's thoughts. If you watch this on YouTube, feel free to jump into the comment section below. If you're listening in the car, whatever, email us, podcast@rickshields.com. On that, I've got a couple of good questions from the Facebook group. And the first one, which aligns to what we've been speaking about, is from Kieran Hodgson. He says, what clubs is Rick contemplating adding to his bag this year? I think you alluded everything. To last week. Yeah, but that's it. You said everything. Give us a bit more.
I don't want anything left in my bag. I don't know.
Putter, I think you've got an even roll putter at the moment. You've had several iterations of essentially the same putter for a long time now. I think you're always going to have a soft spot for that putter and kind of go back to it.
Not sure why, though, because it doesn't really work for me.
I know, but it's the shape you like, isn't it? I think you could go something a bit bigger, maybe, and then kind of switch back. But I think you could be a guy that's got two putters. You've got like a bigger one that you sometimes use, and you go back to that, potentially.
You know what, it sounds daft. I almost want
to... TV's gone off, Matt, by the way. Sorry, that doesn't matter. We'll continue.
I almost want to start from scratch.
Okay.
Like, properly get rid of everything. Like, imagine tomorrow I lose my clubs, all right? Or God forbid they get nicked.
Yeah.
That's almost the stage I want to be in.
Right, so I'll go into the car park with a crowbar.
I just feel like, I for whatever reason...
Your drive is good.
I know, but I don't know if it is. I feel like I just want to go and just start everything
You've
again.
You've been really good for probably the last 18 months at not swapping clubs very often.
I think I've not swapped clubs often for the last 4 years.
No.
I hardly ever swap clubs.
You've had... Titleist 200 now. Before that, you had TaylorMade MCs. Before that, you had a few sets of Wilson. Did you already have Ping Blueprint for a while?
Yeah, but that's not many, is it, really?
You've had...
That's not many.
Cobra drivers. No, I think... depends. What about 3-wood?
Yeah, that needs to change.
Would it go?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't hit it. I want a 4-wood.
A 4-wood? Yeah, I don't mind that.
I want some... I don't know what I want, but something
you've swapped.
Something
this is, this
help
is
me.
The thing, though. You've swapped clubs less since you've played more golf. I think Correct. That's because when you're out on the golf course, we've said this before, when you're out on the course and you've got a decent score going, you don't look down at your driver and think, oh, God, it's 2 years old. You look down and go, this is working at the minute. I love this driver or love this putter or whatever. When you're just playing every now and again casually, that's when you're in the stage where you go, I'll put a new putter in the bag, I'll put a new driver in just for a bit of fun, which is fine.
Yeah, I don't know why. I've got itchy feet, maybe just changing everything, but who knows?
I'm excited for that.
If TaylorMade want to spend some marketing... No, I'm joking. We'll see what happens.
Okay, Jack Leonard has asked us, thoughts on playing from the red tees to build confidence? I've heard Bryson mention it numerous times.
Yeah, well, he mentioned about doing it when he was a kid to help him, you know, get better at shooting under par when he didn't have a particularly huge amount of length, distance. I like it. Mix it up.
Yeah, that's something I think we've done a bit more when we've been playing golf, even just casually off camera, not obviously going off the forward tees necessarily, but playing a bit more, like more forgiving tees, because I kind of started golfing quite quickly, got into competitions, which admittedly were only junior comps at my local club, and they weren't, you know, super serious, although I felt like they were at the time. And in that, you know, you played off white tees, and it was all like proper, and obviously stroke play or stable third and keeping a scorecard and all that kind of stuff, which I enjoy. But because of that, I feel like now every time I play golf, it has to be the hardest course possible. And it doesn't, does it? If not, no. Especially if playing for fun.
I like a 6,500-yard golf course now. Mm. After being punished at places like Bay Hill off like 7,400 yards and playing places like JCB off the back tees and a number of places now I've played off the proper back tees, it's not that enjoyable.
You know what's quite cool? So I met some friends yesterday, went for a bit of a walk around a park. And one of them's a golfer. And he was saying that he'd recently been up to Silloth with his brother to play at Silloth and then went and played Windermere and he really enjoyed it. And he said when he played at Silloth, him and his brother played the front nine, Texas Scramble, it was a nice bit of like a laugh, and then back nine had a bit of a match against each other. He said, oh yeah, you know, we always used to play like quite competitive and take it quite serious, which I kind of enjoy, but it's a bit, sometimes you can't be bothered. And then I thought, you know what, like, so many of us do go out and play the same format every time. You go out and you play stroke play or you play Stableford. We've got a video coming next Friday, Break 75, where we play Texas Scramble against the golf course, essentially. Yeah. It's so much fun.
It was definitely a more kind of energized way of playing golf. 100%.
Got an email for you. So I've got a couple of emails for you. If you want your email read out, listeners or viewers, email us podcast@rickshields.com. Give us a bit of clickbait if you want. That's normally a way of enticing me to get into them. Not always, though, but sometimes it does. You ready for this, Rick?
I am.
Hi, Rick. After 30 years as a weekend hacker and a year of early retirement and more golf, I can finally see a single figure coming, handicap coming. I am down to 10.5 and expect to get that below 10 before the end of the autumn here in Australia. So this listener, David, is from Australia. Good night, mate. I can't resist. That's just pathetic. You want to do yours?
No, go I'm on, not. Go I'm on. Not. Good day, mate.
Nah, rubbish.
That wasn't too bad.
That was bad, really. I'm joking. My question for you is, what reward should I give myself for this milestone? My golf mates say that new clubs are definitely in order, and I thought I would share my bag with you and get some thoughts on what would be the best thing or things to replace. So, you ready? I'm going to do it like freestyle it live. Driving 3-wood, he's got TaylorMade M1.
Okay.
I think I'd swap them.
Nope, they're good.
Hybrids, he's actually got 3 and they're quite new. TaylorMade Stealth, 4, 6, and 7 hybrid.
Okay, interesting.
You know, they're new. Okay, this is what gets interesting. Irons, 7 to pitch and wedge, Nike slingshots. So old school.
Really old school.
He's got a Cleveland, couple of Cleveland wedges and a Vokey, which they're all 10 years old. That could be interesting. And then putter is a TaylorMade Spider X.
Okay.
So, first thing I would say before you come on, Rick, if he's playing well and his handicap down, it might not always be the best thing to swap your clubs because they're kind of working. However, if you want to treat yourself and get some new clubs, Rick Shields is now going to give you his advice.
I don't think the longer stuff, you've got anything to worry about. Correct. Driver 3-wood, hybrids, all fine. The irons, the Nike slingshots, I remember reviewing those years ago, they're very, very hot irons.
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes as you'll start to get a bit better and hit, find the middle of the face a lot more, and I've seen this on a number of power irons, sometimes those power irons can go a little bit too far. So it might be worth you looking into a more kind of, I'm trying to think of a good recommendation. Something that's not maybe more
about like a P790 maybe?
Yeah, P790 or even like a Ping G. Yeah. G iron or something like that, because that's the Ping G iron have got quite a similar shaping to the slingshot, so it won't be too different looking down on, but it's not got a big bulky back to it on the slingshot. And then definitely some new wedges, like 10-year-old wedges, you're probably starting to wear out the grooves a bit there. Treat yourself some new wedges and putters fine.
Yeah, 100%, I'd agree.
As Guy mentioned, you don't have to swap, but it sounds like you're on track.
Yeah, the other angle is maybe the wedges, if they are 10 years old, there could be an argument your grooves aren't as
Sharp,
yeah. And you might lose a bit of spin and control. But ultimately, if you're playing good golf, I mean, the other option would be is don't get any new clubs and maybe treat yourself to go and play a golf course that's like ridiculously, maybe something that's expensive or one you've always wanted to play, or maybe go on a little trip. I don't know, do something that way, because you never know. You might get a new club and it's a nice thing to treat yourself with. But then equally, it's like if it doesn't really help your game, you're going to resent it. And lastly, he said, appreciate your thoughts, from David Fleming. And then he put, it was quite funny because I thought that's what the pro Prestwick's called, David Fleming.
Yeah.
And he even put himself, the club golf from Melbourne, not the golf pro from Prestwick. Although I was born in Scotland. So
funny.
There it is. I've got another email for you. Something that we've had this kind of similar vibe before. So I'm going to ask you anyway, because I feel like depending on the day you're having, you might give a different answer. So today, you're actually in the perfect mood for this because you're in a bit of like a Monday morning mood. So I'm quite interested to see how you answer it. It says, ask Rick, should I say something? It's actually called Dear Rick, really. So for that and alone, we shouldn't really be reading his email, got it wrong. It's Dear Rick, it's not Ask Rick.
Oh,
but it's fine. We can let him off for this once. And this is definitely a anonymous email. So I cannot read his name out live. So I feel like when I say that, I want to read it out because it's like it's on the tip of my tongue. Okay. Hoping for some advice, as this has been bothering me for a while. I took up golf a year ago and started playing with a relative. I'm keeping the specifics a bit hazy because I know the other three people involved are also regular listeners. I'm walking a tightrope here, so please let me remain anonymous.
Okay.
We were playing a golf course that was pretty water-laden a while back, plugged balls, wind conditions, etc. We were able to lift, clean, and place. About five holes in, I saw one of our group drive a ball to the base of a tree. It was almost unplayable, and he would have had to chip out a couple of feet to the sides and give himself a decent shot to the green. I saw him lift and clean the golf ball, but then place it 6 foot away from the tree in a much more favourable spot. He had no idea I'd seen him do it. The other two players were over on the other side of the fairway, so they weren't aware. When we play, there's money involved. Not a lot, but enough to make this kind of behaviour dodgy at least. My quandary is, do I say something about this to the relative? I've been out playing with them several times since this and I've kept an eye on this lad, but they've been playing together for 20 years. I have no doubt he has done this before. What do you think, fellas? Should I bring it up with him, potentially cause a rift between good mates, or say nothing? I love the podcast and everything you are doing.
Wow.
So from what I read from that, and I might be quite wrong in this, the guy that's cheated isn't his relative, but it's one of his relative's good friends. So it's kind of like he's got a cousin, an uncle, a dad, whatever, who's part of this group, and then two other random fellas or friends now.
And he said they all listen to the podcast.
They all listen to the podcast. But
in some sense, you might have just told him right now. Because if you're the person listening,
yeah,
and you know you've done that, there's a high chance you go, that's me.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Well, yeah.
Crap, I've been caught out here.
Or does this person who's moved the ball 6 foot even think about what they're doing? Are they such a cheat? They just do it almost subconsciously.
I love it. I think there's a few things.
Ban them from golf?
No.
Encourage them to cheat more?
I something like this, and it's really difficult to do, I think you've got to call it out there and then. I think if it's gone on and it's dwelled and it, you know, retrospectively now, how is he just going to bring it up randomly?
Question for you then, in what tone? So, all right, let's role play this. You're the guy.
It's a jokey way, isn't it?
I'm all right, okay, I'm just going to clean my ball. Move it with that.
So I've spotted you.
Spin on my balls.
Wow.
Sorry. Pathetic little man. All right, moved it.
Okay. So I would kind of, this is me marching over.
All right, Rick, just, I don't know if it's a 7-iron, 8-iron here.
Just a quick one. I'm pretty sure your ball was behind that tree, and I kind of saw you clean it.
Yeah, yeah, just cleaned it.
And then you've kind of moved it 6 foot away.
Six foot.
It should only really be 6 inches. So if you pick that ball back up, I'll show you where you can put it properly. So if you pick that up, because that would be illegal. If you hit that now,
okay,
I'd have to ban you from this tournament and probably never play golf with you ever again.
Oh, that's a bit strong, right?
So.
So you're going to show me 6 inches? Wink.
Behind this tree.
Right, okay.
6 inches.
Wow. And
if you want a nice
6 inches?
If you want a nice little tip, it's about roughly a scorecard length.
Is it now?
So there's a little tip for you. Mark your ball. Okay. And now annoyingly for you, you're still behind that tree.
I am,
but don't
yeah.
worry, you can chip out sideways and you'll still easy make par. Don't do it again, you cheating little...
That was you did it in a way that made me feel like you were in control of the situation. If I was the cheat there, I would have felt quite embarrassed and quite I should have gone with it.
It's almost like giving you like a not it's not a telling off, it's like a I don't know if you're aware that's 6 foot and not 6 inches.
Yeah.
Easy mistake.
Okay, so that,
easy mistake.
But now that the thing is, that's how I should have done it at the time, correct. But this is several weeks ago.
I just don't know if you can do it. I think you've got to spot him again. I think if you spot him again, then you've got half a chance. If it doesn't happen, if you spot him and it never happens again, then it might be water under the bridge.
On a serious note, this is a bit more of a comical situation. Certainly, it's not a competition, although it is a little bit for money. What's your actual genuine thoughts on cheats? So let's say it's a club comp, it's a Saturday medal, there's a guy, he hits out of bounds, he gets down there, he moves it 6 inches, so it's now inbounds, and people either see him or whatever. What's your actual opinion on those people?
I think that the old saying is like you're only cheating yourself to some degree. Because golf is a game where you have to referee it yourself.
Yeah.
And if you're going down there and you're moving your ball, if it's gone out of bounds and you're bringing it back in or whatever it may be, the way you're cheating it, you're not playing the score that you've actually presented.
Correct.
You're pretending or cheating to get a much lower score than what you've actually got. And in that sense, it's just downright wrong, isn't it? You know, we play golf, and one of the things I love about golf is the respect. Mm-hmm. It's the self-discipline. It's the understanding of the rules. And it's making sure, you don't do things like that where you cheat. The more frustrating one for me as well is actually when players cheat their handicaps.
The opposite way. So you're almost, yeah.
So the amount of times, like, I've overheard conversations like, oh, brilliant, my handicap's gone up today because I'm playing that match on Saturday against that guy and I kind of wanted a bad round today.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, come on. So you've almost purposely played worse today.
You know what? I don't condone cheating in any manner, obviously, but I'd almost someone rather cheat to get a better score than that way.
That's what I mean.
It's
almost
worse
saying.
That. It's like,
this is like when you go to like a corporate event and you've got three. Yeah. You remember that one we played in?
Yes.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was a big...
We played in that one and we did a podcast about it. And we were talking, you, me and John Robbins and Rob Potter, and we played in it. And the scores were just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that was a magic pencil day, wasn't it?
It was a magic pencil day.
But what's worse is if you go to an event and you're looking at these guys and you're thinking, God, they look like good players. Oh, what are you off, fellas? Oh, I'm off like 22 or something. You're like, not off 22. You're way better than
Scratch.
That. Do you know what I mean? I think that's when it's to go and win prizes at a charity event and things
that's
like that.
That's low.
I just think that's really bad.
I think it's bad in every way. Like you said, and it's a bit of a cliche, but you are cheating yourself. You know, golf is a game of trust. Certainly, if you're playing a club match play and it's obviously just two of you and one golfer hits the ball left and one goes right, you could clearly or easily prefer your lie if it's not preferred lies, or you could find out it's not your ball, it's a tailor-made, and just swap it quickly. So there's so many opportunities for golfers to cheat. I think that's one of the things that's so good about golf, that most people don't cheat. It's an honest game. Well, I mean, it is, yeah. If you're going to do that, even if it's a friendly round, so how does the friend who emailed us now, next time he's playing golf, if his other friend, the cheat, does find this ball, it's like, well, actually, has he found this ball, or is he just... Yeah. BSing again.
And everyone kind of knows a player like this at their club. There's always a bit of a club cheat, isn't there?
I think I might be wrong in saying this, might get shot down for this, but it's so, anyone can cheat at golf. You know, that there's idiots all over the place, and all walks of life. But sometimes I think it does come from other sports. So if you've been a footballer, I don't mean a professional, but just, you know, that was what you played growing up, or whether it be rugby or any other sport, really, there is some level of not cheating, but kind of lying. So in a simple, I've said this before, I think, on the podcast, but let's just say simply we were playing football against each other and I kick the ball and it goes out of play. So it's a throw into your team. How often do people go, oh no, it's our ball, ref, it come off his ankle last or whatever. Or, you know, even simply you trip in the penalty area and you claim it's a penalty and you get rewarded with a penalty. That happens.
Kids
in
get taught
that's
that.
What I mean. It's kind of like, it doesn't really get classed as cheating, does it? It's more like... I don't know what the word you'd even use.
Manipulation.
Yeah.
Almost.
And I think that is in a lot, not every sport, it's very, you know, you can't generalize that much, but in a lot of sports, that is kind of the way it works.
But I suppose in a lot of those sports, you're almost just trying to trick the referee.
Correct.
Where in golf, there is no, like in professional golf,
there's not
in
normal
referees,
golf.
But like normal golf, there's no referee walking around with you. I tell you what, I am always very impressed with how well the tour players know the rules. And they use them to their advantage.
Yeah.
You know, when they're taking like a drop.
Well, that's the, yeah.
Like when Jordan Spieth back in like 2018 at Royal Birkdale and he smashed it way right. And like the intelligence he had to how he needed to drop it and where he needed to drop it to give him the best chance of making five on that hole. I always feel like tour pros really know the rules so well.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That could cost them a shot, which could cost them $1 million or whatever. So I don't have an issue with that if you're using the rules to your advantage. But if you're kind of going to just out and out cheat,
oh god, yeah,
it's a bit, that's
totally different.
It's wrong, isn't it?
Like you say, I mean, tour pros have been, have suspicions of being cheats as well.
Yeah. So I had a list of things to talk about, Rick, and we've kind of hit the end of that list now. So how far in are we, Matt? I want to give you 2 minutes of freestyle, so you can you say whatever you want to say for 2 minutes.
To be honest, I wanted about 15 minutes on my Break 75 at TPC
Sawgrass. You've got
Sawgrass.
15 minutes. Enjoy it.
Sawgrass, Break 75.
Yes.
It's absolutely smashed it.
It's had a million views nearly.
Yeah, a million views in like 5 days.
Insane.
There's two things I want to talk about. The little cheeky surprise that people might have heard about in last week's podcast. I just want to...
Oh, yes.
Not dive into that too much, but people also give a little insight to that. But yeah, Break 75 Sawgrass. It was your great decision. We released it the Wednesday before the tournament. The amount of feedback, positive feedback we got from viewers saying they love the fact they got to see the golf course with me playing it before the tournament.
Yes.
It was good. I don't know if it highlighted your experience or other people's experience of like almost getting to know the golf course. Did? Like, you know, because in the Break 75, it's 1 hour, 8 minutes. It's me playing Break at Sawgrass, playing very well on the back nine. I shot level par back nine, 6 over front nine. Sorry to spoil it for people who haven't seen it yet. But like, you really get to see it. The love that Nick, the caddy got.
He's a cool guy.
Is ridiculous and very deserving. It's mad. In America, I mean, certainly in America, like, caddy is so much more popular than it is over here, isn't it? Certainly in these big venues.
You get it a little bit like links courses and stuff, don't you, where it's like a proper resort. But even that is because typically of the influx of like American visitors who almost expect a caddy. But I think it added. He was
so good.
He was a really cool guy. And I like hearing, you know what I like hearing from caddies? It's how they react to your good and bad shots. Because even when you hit a bad one, you don't want a caddy that's going to talk absolute nonsense and be like, oh, that was a good hit, mate, even if you've pulled it into the trees. But they go like, okay, well, that's fine. We'll get up and down. We'll get up and down from there, whatever. Yeah. And he seemed like someone that you would want on the bag if you were playing competitively.
Yeah, he was very, very positive. But like say, it was realistic positivity. Yes. It wasn't a top one in going, oh, unlucky. It was like...
Nearly.
You know what I mean? It was like, not a worry. We didn't want to hit the green in two anyway.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
We want to make
bogey.
So it was very, very, very good. The golf course was spectacular. The 17th, I mean, I don't know if there's a hole in golf that genuinely scares you quite as much as that 17th.
I obviously haven't played the golf course, but I would probably agree because JCB 17th hole, yeah, is a long par three that's like 250 yards downhill island green. But because it's so long, and it sounds a bit silly, you almost... not expect to hit it in the water, but if you do, it's like, well, it's a dead hard hole.
Yeah.
It's dead long.
Yeah.
Whereas that is 120 yards, whatever it is, pitch
and wedge.
I think
you can play it from a number of different tees, and obviously depending where the pin is. The day I played it, it was playing about 118 yards, I think it was. Pin was at the front in that nice little, I must admit, I do like that pin position.
One,
I'm
that.
Glad it was there. I'd love to play it in Sunday pin position on the right. I wouldn't like to play it back left.
No.
I think that's a really hard pin position. But you stood there, and it does, you know, forget the water. I mentioned this in the video. Not a hard hole. Get rid of the water. It's not hard. It's unbelievably easy par three. But then you obviously add in the water. There is a bit of swaling wind around. It's the pressure. It's the fact you're playing this iconic hole. Arguably, I mean, I some guy disagreed with me on Twitter, but I think it is the most famous par three in the world.
Well, what did he say instead?
He said the 12th at Augusta.
Well, it's a very famous one. I feel like the old course hasn't got any massively famous ones to kind of non-golf.
It's only got two par threes.
Well, yeah. Pebble Beach. Is it Pebble Beach?
The 7th at Pebble Beach.
But still, I would probably say Sawgrass is...
So let me have a look, see if there's a list.
It's a shame that the camera lads that were with you didn't get to hit any goes on 17, isn't it?
Really a shame.
Because I thought Matt, who's behind the camera now, would have loved a go on 17. You might work in, Matt.
Overrated hole, I think.
What? Can you try to tell the listeners? So you were walking around filming Rick, obviously, on his wonderful Break 75, and he very kindly said to you guys, do you want to have a shot at this iconic hole? And you had a shot, and what happened?
I think he blacked out.
Yeah.
I think he forgets that, what's happened
it
now.
It was more, it was just tee box and then water, and I was just focusing on the water.
Oh, and they just top it in the water?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah,
you like back shanked it.
But then obviously Rick probably said, don't have another go and redeem yourself.
I did think this is where you were going with this conversation. I was sweating a bit back here, but...
So did it, what happened on your second go?
Mirror image, okay, pretty much.
But you still can say you've played the whole.
Yeah,
didn't finish it. No, didn't you hit your third shot on the green?
Yeah, hole in one on the Sunday pin.
Right. Well, what did they move the pin?
If it was there.
Well, did you have three goes?
Yeah.
And then did you actually hole out with that ball?
No, I walked off.
Okay, fair dues.
Yeah, his third shot they actually hit. It landed. It would have been perfect for a Sunday pin.
Well, you can say what most people can't say, that you've hit a golf shot at Sawgrass.
Now, Harry, one of our other cameramen who was there at the time, he was really nervous. Matt seemed dead confident.
Yeah.
Harry seemed unbelievably nervous, didn't he, Matt?
He did look nervous.
Harry! Harry!
We're going to get Harry.
We on this mic a sec with Matt. I was just bringing in Harry. You can't Harry, see him.
Explain to us about the 17th.
What was your shot like?
My shot was... lucky, it was on the number.
Why was it lucky? It was magical.
It was magical. I mean, normally my yardage is I hit a 52, 120 yards.
Yeah.
I knew it'd been a long day. I knew I probably wasn't feeling sharp in my golf game. So I knew a 50, if I've made contact with a 50, that was the perfect yardage.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah.
And I remember looking down, I remember the backswing. It goes black, and then I just remember looking at the ball in the air and just thinking a sigh of relief that I've actually made contact with the ball. The ball's in the air, it's going forward. I saw it land on the green, and that was it. They made. And then I realised I was actually closest out of everyone that hit the shot.
He was about 10 foot away.
Yeah.
Did you put it out, or?
I did.
Yeah.
He made par.
Yeah. I got a very good read off the caddy. He said it wasn't going very fast, but I thought that's surely not right. We're at Sawgrass 17, surely it's rolling fast. And it wasn't rolling fast.
Slightly uphill.
Yeah, slightly uphill.
Led the green.
Only just missed, but then, yeah.
Tapping past.
And how did you feel?
He's got a scorecard now from TPC Sawgrass that just has a three on the 17th.
Yeah, and Rick signed it.
Yeah. So it's an official scorecard.
Correct.
Well done. And how did you feel for Matt?
I felt bad for Matt.
Yeah. He can come back and redeem himself.
Yeah,
we'll go back again.
I mean, I was actually expecting quite a lot from Matt. Matt's been practicing a lot, you know. Matt's been talking a big game.
Come on now, lads. You're going to start arguing. Right, Harry, go.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. So it's pretty epic. And then to finish the day, I hit an unbelievable tee shot down 18, wedged it in, sunk the birdie putt for 78.
You're the man.
I think it's one of my favourite golf courses.
I'm envious of that one. There's that one and there's King's Barnes that I'm very, very, not envious of maybe, but want to really play. Sometimes when we do a video and I either don't go or I walk around, I'm like, oh yes, he's cool. But then some courses I need to play that golf course.
I must admit it was pretty special. But yeah, hopefully it'll hit 1 million views pretty soon. And then TPC Sawgrass, if you want me back next year, fine, deal done.
Maybe play in the tournament.
Yeah, with Tiger and Scheffler.
Will that be the one that would be your pick? Would you go with those two?
No. Don't know who it'd be with.
And then
last thing.
Go on.
Even though unfortunately still this moment in time, my lips are sealed. Last week's episode got interrupted rudely, but for the right reasons.
It did.
I got given a piece of paper with something on it, and the information of that will be out very soon. There was lots of guesses.
Yeah.
I won't say if any was correct or incorrect yet.
But lots weren't wrong.
Lots were not wrong.
But lots were also wrong.
So stay tuned. Hopefully next week an announcement will be made. But I need to go and hit some golf balls and practice.
Imagine the official announcement was that you've actually got a handicap. And you're coming out, you're off 6.7.
I'm off single figures.
Yeah. Rick Shields off single figures. Stop press.
Brilliant. Guys, thanks for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Be sure to like and subscribe. We shall see you next week for episode 175.
Nice. That's how numbers work. Cool.
And we'll see you soon.
See you later. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.